Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect Purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Now, it's game time. Gabe Kuhn.
Gabe Kuhn was one of the great little trivial nuggets in all of football bios. His grandfather was the inventor of the Easy Bake Oven.
Like a boss, the best lineman on the radio. Well, the only lineman on the radio. It's game time.
Game time. We're ready.
The Gabe Kuhn Show. 92.9 FM. ESPN.
Friday out there, July 19, 2024 is the date. Welcome in to the Gabe Kuhn Show on this lovely Friday. I am your host, former Memphis Tiger offensive lineman Gabe Kuhn on X at G_Kuhn71. I'm alongside the executive producer, as always. That's Connor Dunning on X at C Dunning 929. Connor, how's it going, brother?
Happy holidays, brother.
Happy holidays to you as well. Did you grind all night?
All night.
Did you get some sleep? Did you get some rest? I really need to know.
I got about 5 hours of sleep. I was playing until 2 a.m.
Actually, that's a lot. That's way more than I thought, quite frankly. I heard you talking about it with Jeffrey.
I got to a moment. First off, what do you think people care less about? Your fantasy football team or your road to glory
person? Both equally.
Yes. I finished my freshman year last night, and I said, this is a good stopping point. Because if I continue into my sophomore year and get into this QB battle, I would not go to sleep.
You didn't play that many snaps the first year, I would imagine.
I played 4 snaps.
Okay, that's fair. That makes sense.
It wasn't too bad.
You got to develop.
Well,
you got to develop first, Connor.
But they burned my red shirt. It was like the last game, and I thought I was going to be able to red shirt, and they burned it.
That's bad roster management.
Hey, but I'm already QB1. That's all that matters.
You're Notre Dame.
I am Notre Dame.
That's bad roster management by Marcus Freeman. We need better out of Marcus, man. Need better. You can't blow a red shirt on your up-and-coming quarterback.
Maybe I should make a burner.
What are we doing? What are we doing? Now we have 3 hours to talk on the way, courtesy of 92.9 FM, ESPN, and yours truly. And we have plenty to get to. We have Zach Edey getting hurt in summer league. A lot of take Olympics last night in Grizzlies Twitter. I'm going to get to the bottom of this. And honestly, it's not that complicated. If people saw my ex last night, I tried to make it as you know, easy for you as possible, as simple as possible as to why Zach Edey ended up getting injured. But I would imagine full shutdown is on the way. Grizzlies will be, in all likelihood, it was going to be an uphill battle for them not to make the Final Four here for Summer League, but it looks like they're going to be in the Final Four. There's going to be more games to be played.
Probably so.
And then also, Zaire Williams is not a Grizzly anymore. And I have to give you a lot of credit. You were talking about trade partners. People that would be willing to take a chance on Zaire Williams after 3 very not good years, very unimpressive years. And you said the Nets were at the top of your list, probably the worst team in the NBA roster-wise. And guess where Zaire Williams is going? To the Brooklyn Nets. So I want to give you a shout-out on that.
Well, it's kind of obvious, though.
Yeah.
But yes,
thank you. It made sense.
I'll take it.
Get another second-round pick for them.
I'm going to put it in my Twitter bio.
Add more draft assets, even though it's, 2030 is what the deal was. We'll talk about that deal and what it means for the Grizzlies going forward. As far as guests, we're loaded today. Bottom half of this hour, I don't think we're going to talk a whole bunch of Memphis basketball until we actually get closer to training camp for them. Because we're going to have a bunch of football to talk through. But Parth Upadhyay will join at 4:30 from the Daily Memphian. He's the Grizzlies beat – or not Grizzlies, the Tiger beat reporter, Tiger basketball beat reporter for them. And we'll talk about, you know, this schedule that came out yesterday. We don't have dates, but we do know who they're going to be playing at home or away. We'll also talk about the roster as it's constructed right now. We don't expect a lot to happen. I mean, crazier things have happened, you know. Penny and Rick Stansberry, Slick Rick, they find a way to angle their way in to get more players, but it seems like that roster is about where it's going to be going into season. And Parth will break that down for you at 4:30. 5 o'clock, David Cobb will join from CBS Sports, covering college football and college basketball. And then at 6 o'clock, we are inside 2 weeks away from the Hall of Fame game. In the Hall of Fame game. We're going to have the Bears on one side. We will talk about them today. But on the other side, you're going to have the Texans. And I'm going to bring on my guy from ESPN. He's the Texans beat reporter for them. Also covers the AFC South and the AFC as a whole. But DJ Bienname will join at 6 o'clock. And we will talk through that. Blitz will be at 6:30. What I'm interested to see this weekend, like my viewing schedule, right? I know people are going to see Twisters, which has really good reviews already. But one thing I'm going to be watching, Team USA versus Team WNBA, is going to be fun on Saturday night. Tomorrow night, that is going to be interesting.
What happens? Social media is going to lose its mind if Team WNBA wins that game.
I would think so. But at the same time, they still a lot of talent on that side. A
lot of talent.
And Angel Reese and Caitlin Clark are going to be on the same team. So I guess for one night, everybody's going to have to drop their
beef,
one or the other.
Thank God.
But I think we need to talk through, once we get into the Blitz, and this has been tossed around by a lot of people, if the NBA did something similar, what would that look like? That would be fun.
The NBA versus Team USA?
NBA All-Stars versus Team USA from this year. I have a starting five versus starting five that I want to run out there, and we will discuss when we get into the Blitz.
Huh.
And then we'll talk about the Bears as well, again, inside 2 weeks. From the Hall of Fame game, Caleb Williams finally signed his contract. He is potentially going to play some preseason snaps, although I would imagine he'll be limited. And do I think the Bears have a chance to be a playoff team this year? I think there's three things you have to look at. I'll lay those three things out once we get into the Blitz. But let's go ahead and start with the Zach Edey injury. We know that the Grizzlies handled business in summer league behind some good performances. They got 17-7-6 from GG. And by the way, the assist game, 6 assists to 0 turnovers. It almost felt like he went out of his way to prove a point to social media. Like he has been seeing the complaints, and he wanted to alleviate those complaints or concerns. 6 assists to 0 turnovers. Scottie Pippen Jr. is ridiculous, man. I mean, 17 points, 11 assists to 0 turnovers. Yes. That's
NBA player.
I said that. 11 assists to 0 turnovers. He had 3 steals as well because he's a good on-ball guy. But Zach Edey early in that game in an 88-77 win over the Pelicans summer league team, he went down. And we had the damn Take Olympics follow. Oh, this is what happens when you rest guys like this. He overcompensated. He tried to jump out of the gym to go block a shot. He was overextending, and that's why he landed on a guard's foot and twisted his ankle. You had other people saying, "Well, this is, you know, they pushed him too quickly. Oh, he shouldn't have been out there. They should have shut him down already. Why are they throwing him out there?" Well, one to that thought process, I'll say it was his other ankle. So it had nothing to do with the previously injured ankle. It was a freak accident. And to the people that said he's been out too long, what are we talking about? Did you want to see him play? Did you want to see him get used to the NBA game? Or did you not want to see him get used to the NBA game? Both of those things are ridiculous to me. The way I viewed it, S happens.
Yeah.
Things happen.
It's that simple.
On a damn basketball floor.
It's that simple.
He was being aggressive, trying to go for a block because he's going to be playing somewhat of a role like that in a Grizzlies uniform next year alongside Jaren Jackson Jr. He's going to try to be at 7'4", 300 pounds, a rim protector. He went to go try to protect the rim. He landed awkwardly, twisted his ankle. And here's the other part about it that I think people need to understand. He rolled it to the outside. This is something that is not going to linger that damn much going into training camp and in the regular season. He walked off under his own power. He didn't really have a limp. It's just something that happens sometimes. I think at this point, shut him down completely. Don't worry about playing him again. You're only going to have two more games at the most. It's fine. But I think everybody needs to take a chill pill. I know that there's PTSD from last year and all the injuries that occurred on this Grizzlies roster. But sometimes things just happen that are out of your control. And hopefully, you know, if we're going to put a positive spin on this, hopefully we're getting the bad injury karma out right now.
Right.
As opposed to getting into training camp and into season with all these injuries.
It was just an extremely unfortunate event. It was a bummer. But there is nothing that the Grizzlies front office or medical staff could have done to prevent that injury. Like you said, he was trying to be aggressive on a defensive play, and a smaller player basically put his entire body underneath Zach Edey, who is a very large man, and he landed on somebody's foot, and he turned his ankle. We see it every single day in basketball, that type of injury happens. It didn't happen because they rushed him back. It didn't happen because they sat him out. They told you that he was probable to return for summer league. He returned for summer league. He didn't play the first back-to-back.
And by the way, his minutes before he rolled
good
his ankle,
minutes.
Pretty good minutes.
Good minutes. Good.
3 for 3 from the field, 6 points, 2 rebounds.
So Jeffrey and I talked about this. Did you notice it felt like to me, because we said that the first game, we had a couple of moments where Zach Edey would get the ball, and then he would steal somebody else off. He'd throw it back out, and he'd be waiting for it to get thrown back into him. It just never really would. It felt like in the first quarter when he was actually able to play in those 9 minutes, there was a... They were trying to get him the ball, and they were trying to get him to cook. Like, they were throwing it down. Like, the first play of the game, I think, was a Zach Edey post move.
Yes.
Like, hey, big fella, go
work. It was a quick right-handed baby.
It felt like they were going to try to feature him within the offense last night in a pretty big way. And I think that's why it's such a bummer, because you and I, we were really excited about the Walker-Kessler game, but I think that we can all acknowledge that that's a certain type of big that he played. Misi's
the
complete opposite version, and he was doing well against him, but I would have liked to see an entire game of it.
Yes, 100%. It's a bummer. It's a bummer.
It's a bummer.
But things happen, and I don't think this is the type of injury that is going to be some lingering injury that is going to be so hard for Zach Edey to get over.
Do you know how many
walked off the floor? It was fine.
Do you know how many games he missed at Purdue?
Two.
Yep. I'm not that worried about Zach Edey and his long-term health. I've also seen the take that the game speed is faster, so that's what caused him to turn his ankle. And it's like, he landed on somebody's foot, y'all. He wasn't sliding, trying to get into defensive position. His ankle just gave up on him.
He landed
on somebody's foot. Can we please relax?
And honestly, if we're being completely real, it just fits in with the Grizzlies' injury luck from carrying over.
It has been a series of unfortunate events, Grizzlies edition, for a year and a half now. It's a freak accident. It happens. He walked off the court. If he had to be helped off the court,
I'd be a little bit. I get the frequency freaks people out because it's two appearances, two rolled ankles.
It's kind of just
opposite
like
opposite ankles, but like, damn.
It's kind of like, just come on, man. Are you serious?
Can
we not have a nice thing for one game, please?
Yes. But shut him down. It's fine. We'll move on with our lives. Now, also, the Grizzlies today finally got rid of Zaire Williams, which they've been trying to do for a while. They acquire Mamadi Diakite, who is from Virginia a few years back. I believe he was on that national championship winning team,
yes,
if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
And then they got the draft rights to Nemanja Dangubic, which draft and stash from, get this, 10 years ago, 2014, I think 54th overall pick. Holy hell. I was talking to Brad Carson before the show, and I just want to see, like, somebody show me all 30 teams. I want to see the draft rights and how far they date back.
Oh, yeah.
I was amazed that they still hold on to draft rights.
I thought it was a typo. I thought it was a typo.
24. He's 31 years old, and he's never played in the NBA. And they have the draft rights from 2014.
Spoiler alert, never will.
Yes, 100%. But the Nets get Zaire Williams and a future second-round draft pick. This moves out the $6.1 million guaranteed to Williams for his contract in 2024-25, creates more salary cap flexibility as the Grizzlies work forward in this offseason, looking at Luke Kennard. They basically, and this is ultimately what happened, they paid somebody else for roster flexibility.
Uh-huh.
And that's fine. That's what we expected to happen. Zaire Williams had negative trade value. He always has, for the most part, besides his rookie year. But they tried to, you know, see if he could be a part of this team. Never really could. And, hey, if you have to pay somebody for some roster flexibility to get into a playoff and championship window, go ahead and do that. Now, Mamadi Diakite has $1.3 million guaranteed. I think there's been some back and forth about are they going to waive him or let him be on that 15th roster spot as the 15th guy. I don't think it matters that much. I'd imagine that he will get waived and they'll figure something out there. But they'll use that $5 million difference between Kennard and Mamadi Diakite or $5 million between Diakite and Zaire Williams to go facilitate a deal to get Luke Kennard back on the Grizzlies. Everything points to Luke Kennard being back with the Grizzlies. Now, my first question here about Luke Kennard and moving forward now that this move is made, what does that contract look like? What does that contract ultimately land on? I heard you and Jeffrey talking about it earlier. You said somewhere around two for 20 million or 3 for 27 million, somewhere around 9 million to 10 million a year. I think that's relatively fair. I don't know which I'd rather take. Do you want the shorter deal so you can get him off the books if it doesn't work out? Or do you want the longer deal so you can keep yourself in a window with a good shooter, two of the best shooters in the NBA, and Desmond Bain and Luke Kennard? I guess time will tell. But you have now made the move to free up the space to bring in Luke Kennard, and I think that's a positive.
Absolutely. I would prefer the 2 for 20 if it's something around that type of range, just because I want the flexibility of when they're going to have to pay guys moving forward. And that's another thing that this deal does, too. I've seen some people say, well, this is a cheap move by the Grizzlies to get under the tax. Well, they're getting under the tax so that they can bring back Luke Kennard, and I'm not sure if y'all know this. There's a big guy on this team named Jaren Jackson Jr. who's on a team-friendly deal right now. Guess what he's not going to be on next time his contract comes around? Yeah, he's got a Defensive Player of the Year award. He's one of the best young bigs in the NBA. You're going to have to pay that man. If you had to pay Desmond Bain, you're going to have to get ready to pay Jaren Jackson Jr. So not every single move they're making is just for this season. They have to be looking toward the future. If you want to keep this window open and you want to have this trio together, Desmond Bain, Ja Morant, and Jaren Jackson Jr., you're going to have to pay these guys. So they're getting ready for future moves. I don't view this as a cheap move whatsoever, because I'm also just like, Zaire? That's not the guy to die on that type of hill on, especially when this move helps you facilitate a move for Luke Kennard, who's coming back on a team-friendly deal, which is exactly what all of us wanted. Because Luke Kennard is an asset. He makes your basketball team better.
As much as you want them to be in a championship window going into next season, you do have to think about the future. You can't just sit here and go over both of the tax aprons and feel uncomfortable, because truth of the matter is, I want to see what this whole group looks like. I don't think they're like ready to win a championship this season. I mean, things could happen. They could get to that point. We'll see.
Maybe.
But to keep yourself under those tax aprons, to be able to save some money along the way, not have to write these massive checks as repeat offenders, I think that's a good thing. You can't just view it as cheap. Sometimes you need to be a little bit cheaper. So going into the future, you can pay for Jaren Jackson Jr. and pay for him comfortably. So you can make some moves around the edges that you wouldn't be able to make if you kept all these things on your roster and tried to pay for it that way, getting above those aprons. I don't think this is in any way some type of cheapo move. I think this is smart GMing. I think this is smart by the front office to try to get ahead of some of these things, save some money.
To be quite honest, I thought they were going to have to give up more to get rid of Zaire. It only being one pick, I was like, oh, great. All right. I thought it was going to have to be two.
Yeah. Now, can we look back at the Zaire era real quick? This is the biggest miss of the Kleiman era. There's no question about it. This was a guy that you thought was going to be your jumbo wing of the future, and he never really showed anything. And that's why you had to pay the Brooklyn Nets to basically take him. And, on the back end, it still looks bad. Hindsight, looking at that pick, we didn't really like it in the moment at number 10 because of his year at Stanford. And all of our issues seemingly came to light. And that is not a good look on Zach Kleiman. But I do like a front office that is willing to admit they were wrong. Let's move on, move forward without him in the plans. And that's where you're at. Sometimes you miss, and when you miss, you have to make right for it. I think they made right for it by getting him elsewhere, saving some money on the cap.
I wish Z the best. He did not make sense on this Grizzlies roster anymore. They were trying to ask him to play a role that he did not have the ability to do. He needs more time. He needs a low-pressure environment where winning is not the priority. he still doesn't have one type of skill that he excels at. I guess he's pretty good at rim running, but that's when he's on the court with a guy like John Morant. So I don't know if that's more John Morant or if that's more Zaire Williams. He is still a very raw prospect. He's still a young player. Maybe he figures it out on the Brooklyn Nets, but he didn't have that type. He didn't have the luxury of time that he's going to have on the Nets that he had with the Grizzlies. And I am glad that they finally made the decision, hey, this did not work out, admit you were wrong, and move on. And to be quite honest, it doesn't look as bad as it did anymore because you found guys like G.G. Jackson. Yeah. You found guys like Vince Williams Jr.
All
and when you really
control.
Go back and look at that draft, it's pretty obvious that the two guys that they wanted, we all know it, Franz Wagner and Josh Giddey. And the Giddey one is not aged great. The Wagner one has aged beautifully. But everybody that got taken after Zaire too, none of them really worked out. Davion Mitchell went right before him. Moses Moody went a couple picks back. He's really the only one that has had any staying power within the NBA. So, you know, at the time, Moody is who I wanted, and he would have been a good pick at the time. But it's not like it was some major disaster of a pick. When you kind of look at what was around. No, it didn't work out.
Right.
What I'm saying, though, is that the sin of that draft has been forgiven because of what they've done in drafts after that, finding Vince, finding G.G. Jackson,
finding these team-friendly deals. Right, it is, in the second round.
Sure, but they still found him.
Yeah, but also in that draft, you had Trey Murphy, if you would have stuck there at 17 in all likelihood, because you traded that to the Pelicans, that's who they took there. Like, there were more opportunities out there. It was a miss.
I'm not saying it wasn't.
There's no way to really insulate it. I think the insulation that you put in there is relatively fair. You have G.G. Jackson and Vince Williams Jr. on four-year cost-controlled contracts. Those have the potential to age as the best contracts in the NBA over the next 4 years.
Sure.
So I like that about it. But, you know.
They cut their losses. They messed up.
That's fine. Honestly, you know, there was some thoughts that they could have cut their losses a little bit earlier. But last year you were looking for an answer, and Zaire seemed to be that answer at that moment.
Well, I think it's very clear that nobody wanted Zaire, y'all. Nobody wanted him. They have been shopping him for a while now. It's not like they just started doing it a few weeks ago. They have been trying to get off of Zaire Williams for a minute now. And they have not been able to do it. And they finally found a deal. And to be quite honest, it was a better deal than I thought it was going to be. I thought you were going to have to attach two picks to him to get rid of him. And to be quite honest, and it worked out. You freed up space for Luke Kennard. You got under the tax. You didn't have to give up an asset that really matters. It's a good deal. It's a good deal. It doesn't have to be a great one. Don't let perfect get in the way of good. This is a good deal for the Grizzlies.
Yeah, it's a fine deal. It's a fine deal. You righted your wrongs from that one draft.
And you have flexibility now.
You
have options with that 15th spot.
You righted your wrongs, and you're moving forward, which is sometimes the best thing to do. We saw a team in the Dallas Mavericks who signed Grant Williams to this massive contract last offseason. They righted their wrongs mid-season to go get rid of him and find other players that could play. And what did it land them? An NBA Finals.
It's one of the main reasons they got there.
So, again, sometimes you can admit defeat on things that happen. No front office is without misses.
Right.
I mean, you look at the Thunder right now, it seems like they're hitting on absolutely everything, like hitting on all cylinders.
Well,
but even them, they've had some misses in the past. Every single front office has misses along the way. You just have to take them in stride, and when you feel that they are misses and that there's nothing you can recover from them, you have to move on. That's what they did with Zaire Williams, and it's the end of the day, end of story. You can't really look back at it now. What's done is done. They're moving into a better era without Zaire Williams on this roster.
I will take this type of front office making a mistake every once in a while than the previous front office. I've seen a lot of people be like, this is an incompetent front office. And I'm like, I saw incompetence. Yeah. I remember incompetence, and his name was Chris Wallace. This is not Chris Wallace. It is not that type of front office. The Grizzlies are very good at drafting.
How incompetent can you be if you won an executive of the year? You can't be that incompetent. You can have misses.
Zaire was a miss. Roddy was a miss. Laravia, maybe. We don't know. It's kind of a mixed bag right now. It's a mixed bag right now with Laravia. But there are two definite misses. They have far more hits.
But I don't think you can sit there with a front office and grade them every single time on every miss they make when they have some really good moves that they've made along the way. I think you're setting yourself up for failure if you want them to bat 1,000.
Yes.
They can't bat 1,000, but if they bat somewhere around 500, somewhere a little bit above that, which I think Zach Kleiman has, I think that you're in a good spot. Misses happen. It doesn't mean you can't recover and get into a championship window.
Right.
And that's clearly what they're trying to go
to. To your point.
And now, you know, go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think that the roster as constructed now got a shot.
Yeah.
He's got a shot. Not a favorite.
I think.
But they got a shot.
Luke Kennard signed back. Get that, you know, injury luck. Injury luck.
Knock it on the wood.
That's the preface of this.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep. And when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience because Purple mattresses are made with a gel flex grid. The gel flex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips and support in others like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the gel flex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex Grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
This whole thing, I think somewhere between 3-6 in the Western Conference is fair. It's a fair expectation.
And that gives you a shot.
And that certainly puts you in a short list of teams at the top of the Western Conference who can go win the Western Conference, because we've had five different champions in the Western Conference in 5 years. Don't lose sight of that. There's a lot more parity. A lot of things happen along the way. Injuries happen for other teams, too, although I know everybody thinks it happens strictly to the Grizzlies, because last year is a good example of that. But I still think the Grizzlies are in a fine spot. In a fine spot. As long as you have those three guys at the top, Zach Edey tends to work out, G.G. Jackson, Vince Williams Jr. on these cost-controlled contracts, I think you can move into the future comfortably.
What do you want them to do with that 15th roster spot?
To be honest, doesn't matter that much. But I don't know. I think maybe waiving Mamadi Diakite and finding a minimum big that may provide a little bit more would be the direction I'd go. But I don't really have that much of an opinion on it. What's your thought?
I could see them keeping him
for a year.
I'm fine with them hanging on to him. I think I would prefer them leave that roster spot open, because it just gives them some flexibility. If somebody comes along that you think, you know, would be a good person to pick up for this team. I mean, I know a few people have mentioned, like, maybe Precious Achiuwa wants to come back to Memphis,
right,
and he can be a big in that 15th spot. I think he might cost a little. I still think that Precious might be.
At this point in the game, I don't think he's going to pay that much.
Maybe. But I'm just leaving options open. But who knows? They also might want to leave that spot open, because once you get around the deadline, Scotty,
yeah,
time to come up, brother.
Yeah, and then find another two-way.
Yep.
After that. No, I mean, there's options they'll have. I don't think but to answer the ultimate question, Mamadi Diakite is not going to last long on the Grizzlies roster, no matter what way you shake it.
If the 15th man on this Memphis Grizzlies team matters,
we're going to have another bad year.
We have larger conversations to have.
Yeah, we're going to have another very unfun year,
yeah,
going into next season.
Zero fun, sir.
Yes. So, I hope it doesn't matter, to say the least. Now let's go ahead and grab our first break of the day, and when we come back, I want to go from the Grizzlies, our professional basketball team in town, to Tiger basketball. Roster seems complete. We have some schedule talk to get through. So Parth Upadhyay from the Daily Memphian will join coming up next, right here on the Gabe Kuhn Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Daily Memphian, he's on X at @PUpadhyay_Parth. It's been a while. What's happening, brother? How's it going?
It's going well for the most part, man. It's going well. I got back to Memphis after about 12 days away. Got back on Tuesday. Had a friend's wedding, a college friend's wedding in Raleigh in early July. And then my cousin got married in Newark, New Jersey this past weekend. So kind of been going and going. Got back a little bit run down. Didn't think anything of it. Felt under the weather yesterday, and it turns out I've got the Rona.
Oh, the Rona. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I think fun. I kind of not hear fun. Maybe a little bit of nasal passage blockage, maybe something like that, a little congestion. But outside of that,
for
you
sure.
You sound great. You still sound great.
Yeah, I appreciate that. appreciate that, man. I do appreciate it. I feel great. I feel energized. I don't feel like I've got COVID.
Yeah.
It's 2024, man. I thought that was a thing of the past.
No, I hear you. And then President Biden tested positive yesterday, too. They had to throw him in the... They had to lock him away in the Oval Office, it seems like, yesterday.
Man.
Yeah. Crazy. Oh, my gosh. Now, let me ask you about this. Like, as far as, like, since you've been covering the team, this is about as quiet an offseason, like, truly as quiet an offseason as you've dealt with, right? It's been quiet for going on a couple of months, month and a half, for the most part, besides the P.J. Carter news.
No, I was going to say, about 4 to 6 weeks, a month and a half stretch that we've had here has been the tamest in the offseason that I've covered the team. I've covered the team since 2022. Obviously, so last offseason you had DeAndre Williams trying to get a waiver. You had Mikey Williams and his shooting case. You had, you know, just players being added up until August.
right.
This offseason,
well, December really, by the way.
Well, just December. What am I saying?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that was nuts. This offseason, you had a little bit of chaos. You had a little bit of fireworks early in the summer here. But man, when I went back home, I was still working in early July, but I remember feeling kind of comfortable being able to leave Memphis, right, and being able to be with family and kind of unplug for a bit. And I've never felt that way from the time I've got this job. So that was nice.
No, I hear you. Nice. I hear you. Now, I think the roster's about set. I don't think there's really much else they're going to add. Damarian Yates was the walk-on. P.J. Carter is the guy they brought in on scholarship from UTSA. Ultimately, he committed to Rice and signed to Rice. We've gone through all that, and then Slick Rick pulled an Emmanuel Acott on him. But what do you think about this roster, all said and done, for the most part? I can't imagine they're going to add that much more. There doesn't seem to be that much more out on the open market. A lot of things could change. But if this is the roster they go into the season with, how do you feel about this roster?
Yeah, I think it's a pretty decent to good roster, right? Like, they've got different guys who have produced at high levels in college and guys that know how to play roles, most importantly. It's not like last year where you've got a bunch of players who just get buckets and can fill up stat sheets that way. No, you've got P.J. Haggerty, who's your bucket getter. You've got Colby Rogers, who's your three-point specialist. Dane Danger, who's your interior guy. The list goes on and on. Musa Cisse, who's your rim protector. Like, you've got guys who are elite, but not just elite at dribble, 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 get a bucket, elite at specific things on the floor, and they complement each other, you know? And I think that's huge. Obviously, we've seen different analysts of different opinions. I saw Rob Dowster and John Martin kind of be a little bit harsher, right, on the roster construction that Penny Hardaway and Rick Stansberry and others have done this offseason. But it may not look as flashy as last year on paper, but I think this has the potential to be a much smoother season because of guys knowing their roles and knowing their place, if that makes sense.
Yeah, 100%. It's the seventh roster he's put together. And I saw John wrote something up for the Daily Memphian about that, John Martin. And he basically asked, like, where does this fit in? I think it fits in more toward, like, 2022, where you had Kendrick 100%. Davis and DeAndre Williams at the top, and then a bunch of role players. Now,
role players are so much better.
No, they're better.
At least on paper.
Yes. Now, the one thing that is missing is at the top, you don't exactly know who your Kendrick Davis and DeAndre Williams is going to be. You have no idea, really. Like, P.J. Haggerty, sure, you can buy into that, but also he's coming off 1 year at Tulsa, which was not a good team, and he's going to how is he going to bridge that gap? Is it going to look better, you know, taking a step up in competition, especially in the out-of-conference? That's the one thing that you do have concern about right now, is sort of pecking order and how it's all going to look like on the offensive end.
No, I agree, and I think when it comes to that, yeah, you don't know, right? You don't know who your KD, Kendrick Davis, and DeAndre Williams will be, but I think you've got three guys who are kind of your big three, if you will, or at least three guys who are going to be in contention for those top two spots, and that would be, what, P.J. Haggerty, Tyrese Hunter, and Dane Danger. I think those guys are going to be the anchors offensively, no matter how you spin it, with other guys like Colby Rogers still being a key factor, Baraka Okoji, once he gets fully healthy, being absolutely key as the backup point guard there. But you've got three alphas and three guys who are going to be relied upon to do a bulk of the scoring. And I think that at least is key versus last year where you had, what, five of those guys, maybe six,
right.
You know, depending on how you're counting.
Well, you had five or six of those guys, and you didn't have any defensive identity, which is what Penny Hardaway needs, right? And I think the last time they had a number one defense, according to KenPom, was when Musa Cisse was on campus. He's back on campus. I like this.
Yep.
To be honest with you, I like this front court. Like, do you sort of share my sentiments there? Dane Danger, back to the basket, scoring big. Looks like he's lost some weight so he can run up and down the floor a little bit more than he did at Illinois over the years. You have Tyreek Smith, who is just like energy guy up and down the floor, shot blocking, a menace, even though he's not the tallest guy in the world. And then Musa Cisse, who's one of the best defensive bigs in the country. So, like, I like this front court.
Jordan, you know?
I think, yeah, and then Nick Jourdain, although he may play a little bit more on the wing this year. I just feel like you have this front court group that is very versatile. Like, you have different guys for different roles even within that front court.
No, exactly. And I think that's, like, a small look at how the rest of the team's assembled, too, like we said, right? Like, you've got guys who are filling particular roles, and especially so in the big men rotation, which I think is, you know, once again, not the flashiest. You don't have the Jordan Brown, you know, your former McDonald's All-American, who was the Lou Henson Player of the Year, Lou Henson Award winner.
Yeah.
Type of player, but you've got guys who have proven to be really good and guys who do different things and complement one another really well.
Now, one thing that I have been like, it depends on who you talk to, how they feel about PJ Haggerty. Some people will say, okay, he played at Tulsa, not a very good team. What's he going to look like when he gets in a Memphis uniform? Is he going to be able to fill it up? If you squint your eyes hard enough, maybe you can see Kendrick Davis if you're on the positive side of things. Like, where do you fall on that? Like, are you just going to wait and see? Or do you have a thought process on where you think PJ Haggerty is going to fit into this whole thing?
I think the answer, you know, as it usually is somewhere in the middle, right? Like, I don't expect him to go out there and be Kendrick Davis because that would be unfair, I think. But I don't expect that he'll go from being a 21-point-per-game scorer to someone who only scores 10, right? I don't think that's likely either. I think he's going to get buckets. I think he's going to do well. But I also think it's going to take time. Having a guy like Tyrese Hunter back there with him is so key. You know, it takes away the responsibility, but it takes away a lot of that weight and that burden of having to run a team and orchestrate an offense on every single possession from a young guy like PJ Haggerty when you've got Tyrese Hunter, who can do some of those things and take the weight off of him.
Yep, 100%. I'm with you. I still think PJ Haggerty has the ability, especially once we get into AAC play, to be the same type of scorer that he was last year, because he did it against the AAC already. The one thing that you do concern yourself with is that out-of-conference schedule that is one of the toughest in the country.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, it's
brutal.
Loaded.
It's brutal.
It's loaded. And I tweeted this out after Arkansas State got added, but and I'm sure people know this, but every single opponent on Memphis' non-conference schedule so far, and they do have two spots left that they haven't announced, which I'm expecting to be low major or
Alabama State,
opponent.
Jackson State, something like that.
Exactly. But every team, aside from the ones that might be intentional, just because we don't know who they're going to play there, is ranked 105th or better in Bar Torvik's top, 2025 T-rank projections. Right?
Yep.
Mississippi State, Ole Miss, Clemson, all top 50. And that Maui field is absolutely loaded. You know, you got North Carolina, you got UConn, you got Michigan State. That list goes on and on. So there's no cupcakes there at all. Even Arkansas State is a top 105 team, according to Bart Torvik, going into next season. So there's no givies.
Yeah, now speaking of Bart Torvik, I did like to see that the NCAA, the committee, is actually going to add his T rank as a legitimate metric for when they pick NCAA tournament teams. Now, considering where Memphis has been and Bart Torvik, probably not the best thing in the world, but maybe it'll be a whole lot better this year. But I had my doubts about how he was ranking teams last year because it's a predictive metric. But it really does work out. It really is a good metric that has been solid at least the last couple of years when we followed it.
No, I think so for sure. It's one of those things where you look maybe preseason and the numbers and the rankings don't align with what you may have thought personally, and then you look in maybe December and it still isn't aligned. But by the time you get to January and February, you're like, oh damn, maybe that Bart Torvik was onto something.
Now conference schedule did get posted. Obviously, we're waiting for dates. They have six home and aways, three aways only, and three home onlys. The home and away, UAB, FAU, South Florida, Temple, Wichita State, and Rice. Aways only are Charlotte, UTSA, and Tulane. And then the home only are going to be ECU, North Texas, and Tulsa. When we look around this conference, like I even opposed to last year, we looked at FAU. Okay, when's that going to be scheduled? We know there was two in the last four games of their entire season, of their regular season. This year, is there anything really to like break down about the way this AAC schedule is shaping up?
Not really, and I think that's the problem, right? With the conferences, there's not that same level of excitement. Last year, like you said, you had FAU to cling on to, and Houston, Cincinnati, and UCF had left. This year, what do you have? You got UAB, who's done some stuff, you know, this offseason and gotten some guys and got some players, and that is a rivalry, you know, if you want to call it that. I know that's kind of a point of controversy among the fan base.
Yeah.
But, you know, there is that. There's UAB. We'll see what South Florida does, even though their roster has been gutted. They have, you know, obviously kept their head coach, which is huge. And then Florida Atlantic, which is not going to be the Florida Atlantic of the past 2 years. So
now,
lot of uncertainty.
How bad of a fall off do you think this is going to be for Florida Atlantic with John Jacobs, who is well respected? He's a well respected coach. Was on Baylor's staff for a while. And he was the associate head coach since 2022, and he's done some recruiting, but not a whole lot. But how bad of a fall off? It's going to be a fall off. How bad of a fall off do you think it'll be?
Well, I think just because the highs were so high, right? Like, whether you want to call it a magical run, a fluke run, or whatever, you know, I know people want to characterize it different ways, but they did make a Final Four, and they did beat, what was it, Arizona in Las Vegas, right? Like, the season following. So the highs were very, very high. When that team was clicking, it was, you know, a top 20 team in the country for most of that 2 year stretch. So I don't think it'll be that. I think you're talking more of, you know, maybe contention for what, a top four, top five seed in the AAC tournament,
right.
which is certainly a fall off. It's not, you're not talking about a basement dweller in a crap conference, but you're also not talking about a team that's going to be a lock for the NCAA tournament.
But I really mean that. Like, this is a question I really, like, I need an answer to. We have UAB and Memphis at the top. I think most people will immediately tell you that. Who the hell else? Like, who else do you, like, who can we actually buy into?
Man, that's tough.
Right?
That is tough.
I think it's going to be a spur-of-the-moment decision, this question that I'm asking. It's going to be, let's watch, and let's see how this thing plays out. Let's see what type of players sort of emerge, and then we'll be able to figure it out. But I think it's Memphis and UAB at the top, no doubts.
Exactly. And I think in that top, I don't know, top five, top six of the conference, you're going to have a lot of teams kind of clustered in there with not much separation, aside from the two that we've mentioned, Memphis and UAB. I think you'll have North Texas kind of in that top six mix. Temple will be contending for one of those spots. But, man, the fall-off between 1, 2, and maybe 3, and then everybody else is going to be, I think, larger than ever before in this conference.
It is kind of funny to see with this roster, though, too, in the American Athletic Conference, because they just literally have gotten all the American Athletic Conference All-Stars. There are a lot of revenge games for a lot of these guys.
Like, oh, yeah.
I mean, that's you have P.J. Haggerty in Tulsa, Colby Rogers in Wichita State, Nick Jourdain in Temple, even though we saw that last year. It's just there's a lot of different I mean, we could have a couple of you know, extra headlines going into a couple of these matchups. We could try to have a couple of extra headlines.
Oh, no, that definitely had some spice. I mean, you saw what Jaquan Walton did last year, right, on the road against Wichita State. He went berserk. And those games are always fun because you don't know how guys are going to react. Either they're going to, you know, ball out like Jaquan Walton did, or they'll be nervous and kind of timid. But it definitely adds some intrigue and some spice to a conference slate that needs every bit of seasoning that we can find from the cabinet.
Yeah.
It is disappointing, though, that P.J. Haggerty won't get to go to Tulsa this season. There is no return game there. Tulsa is playing at Memphis, but Memphis is not playing at Tulsa. P.J. Carter, though, heads back to UTSA, you know, where he played in San Antonio, so that's cool. Colby Rogers gets to go back to Wichita State, and then
maybe with PJ Carter, a little bit of Rice. I mean, because a little bit of Rice action. I don't think the Rice fans are probably the biggest fans of him. Although I don't know how many Rice basketball fans we're really worried about.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm not sure what the capacity of that gymnasium is, but there will be an angry crowd there.
Yes, 100%. Now they have 10 scholarship guys. Barack Okoji will probably miss about a month is sort of what we're looking at. Considering his injury,
he's expected to be back before the season starts.
Okay.
It's just about him being in game shape, which is tough, right? When you're looking at how much time he's going to be sidelined before the season, when that November 4th opener against Mizzou comes around, will he be, 100%? Probably not. Will he be available? I'm pretty confident saying he will be.
Yeah. But with 10 scholarship players, how confident do you feel about like that number? because they haven't filled out the full roster of scholarships. They have 10 scholarship players, guys that they feel like could potentially help. One of those guys is Jared Harris, though, so we'll see if he can actually help in year one. We know the true freshmen have not done all that well in Penny Hardaway's system as of late. But, I mean, like, there's double-edged sword there. I think it clears up the rotation for Penny because we've seen in the past less ultimately equaling more. And 2022 is the best example of that. You had less guys that were able to give you good minutes, so there was less confusion about the rotations and who you were going to insert into the game. But also with that, injuries could be a problem. They really could.
Yeah, no, for sure. And I think we got a little bit of a scare with that with the Baraka Okoji news that we got last month, you know. Just kind of reality check, like, hey, like having 9 or 10 guys is great because it limits the confusion and it puts guys in roles and it, you know, kind of gives you less mouths to feed, right? But when guys start going down, okay, like now you're running thin a little bit and that's going to be a concern, something that the staff will have to manage. Yeah, they've got 9 guys signed, right?
Right.
And then you've got PJ Carter, who by all accounts is expected to sign, but sure. The university has not announced his signing. And then you've got Daniel Vieira Tuck, the kid who's from the Dallas area but played in Portugal this past season, who has not signed, and the university has not announced his signing, and there's kind of some confusion there as to what will happen with his future. But, yeah, you've got 10 solid guys in the mix. And that's not to say they won't add another player, but I think anybody they add at this point is not going to be of consequence, as you kind of alluded to.
Well, doesn't it feel like a lot of coaches are taking this approach, though, too, trying to limit using their roster? I mean, John Calipari said he wanted 8 or 9 guys, which I think is a little too short. Like, if you had 8 guys, that's a little short. But, like, Kansas did it last year, and I know that Bill Self is trying to completely fix that, but it feels like a lot more coaches around the country are trying to limit how many guys they bring in on scholarship. They're not filling all of those spots.
No, 100%. And I think with Memphis and Penny, with the Naquan Tomlin experiment going, you know, at least on the court, like so well, right? Last year, yeah. Like Tomlin was huge. He balled out. He killed it. Having a spot open because of that experience having gone great for Memphis is something that that the Tigers have wanted to do since the start of the offseason. So even if DVT, Daniel Vieira Tuck signs, they'll still have 2 spots open, and I expect them to leave at least one of those still vacant heading into the season.
I hear you. Now we'll see if there's any Memphis basketball news coming down the pike, and if there is, I'll definitely hit you up and get you back on the show. But for now, I'm going to say farewell, and I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. That is Parth Upadhyay. He's a Memphis Tigers basketball beat reporter for the Daily Memphian on X at PUpadhyay. _. Now let's go ahead and grab a break, and we'll get to hour number 2 coming up next. And starting that would be David Cobb from.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches, because the way these ball players are hitting them, yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.